Well, how are you guys? All right, great. It's good to see everybody after the snowpocalypse in Roanoke last week, right? Man, it's like we're living up north. There's still snow on the ground out there. I don't know what's going on, but it's okay. We're here. I'm glad to be back together. You know, the introvert in me likes to worship from home every once in a while like that, if I'm just being 100% honest. I hope you guys enjoyed it as well. But it is good to be back to spur one another on, like we talked about last week, ironically talking about gathering and community when we weren't together. But here we are today. So last week we talked about building authentic community, what that looks like here for our church, centered on the gospel, right? Centered on grace for one another because of the grace that we've been shown so that we can show it to one another. Before we get into the topic for today, our next core value, our third core value, I wanted to make sure that you guys realize this. We announced last week during the announcements section, if you listened to those, our Multiply Christmas offering total, okay? So I'm very excited to announce this. In case you missed it, I want to make sure we do that at the beginning of the sermon today. You know, we asked our church to raise double during the month of December, to give double during the month of December what they normally give. Now, on average, as a church, we normally give just under $15,000 a month, okay? We gave a total of over $34,000 as a church in the month of December. Isn't that awesome? That's super cool. Now, about 4,000 of that was from outside givers, partners who are still partnering with us to fund the church plant here for the next year or two. So that means that as a team, we raised $15,000 more than we normally raise. So we're going to give $15,000 away this year to organizations in Roanoke, to church plants. That's really going to bless especially the church planters that we give, but I think also our city and the organizations that we give to, because we want to make sure that they realize here in Roanoke that we care about them. And sometimes that equals money for people. And so I'm really excited. We haven't figured out who we're going to give the money to yet. More to that in the next few months as we kind of vet people out. We want to make sure that we don't just give away money without knowing that they kind of align with our values, gospel-centered, mission-oriented, that kind of thing. But I'm excited to lay those out for you over the coming months because that's just exciting for us. And I think it'll be good to show them that we care in Roanoke. And that's actually what we're talking about today. That's going to be our third core value. You know, we've discussed what it means to be gospel-centered. We discussed authentic community last week. And today we are talking about hospitality. That's our third core value. So if you're taking notes, I'm just going to go ahead and give you the main point for today that you can write down if you want to do that. We demonstrate hospitality to our culture. That's what we do as a church. We want to demonstrate, and we do demonstrate hospitality to our culture here in Roanoke. Now, it's almost a continuation of building authentic community, right? Because it's bringing people into the community that we build here as a church. Now, as we bring people in, numerically, that's the beginning of multiplication, which we're going to talk about next week as our last core value. So you can see kind of how all of our core values are related. It's founded on the gospel. It's got to be gospel-centered. It leads to building authentic community and then bringing others into that, which we'll talk about today as hospitality, which then leads to multiplication, which we'll talk about next week. Now, this is where it gets tricky, though, okay? Because hospitality is really the vehicle for multiplication. It's the vehicle for growth in a church, but we have to be careful here, because we don't want to let it become the means to the end of growth, right? It has to be hospitality for the sake of the people that we're showing hospitality to, not for the sake of growth. Now, when the person becomes the means to the end, it's fake hospitality, right? That's what that leads to. And ironically, fake hospitality will not lead to numeric growth at all. I was trying to think of something like to illustrate this for us. I don't know this is a perfect one-to-one, but I think it helps us get there a little bit. It's kind of like a salesman that you might come across in any given sales situation that you are in. You need something, and people sell that thing to you, right? And if you believe that a salesman actually cares about giving you the best deal or cares about helping you find what you need, then you're probably likely to go with that salesman and give them your business, you know? But if you think that the salesman is tricky and shady and creepy, and you don't think that they have your best in mind, right, then you're very likely not to give them your business, which means they're not going to get the sale, even though their job is to be a salesman. You see the point there? So let me give you this. My wife, Tamara, used to be a salesman. She used to sell glasses and fit people for glasses as an optical consultant. Now, she wasn't working on commission, so it didn't matter how many glasses she sold. That didn't impact her income. So she really had the freedom to tell people what she thought was best for them in these scenarios. But, and she said she could give me any number of conversations she had with people on this. She gave me one in particular. She said there was a young professional in her mid-20s that came into the office, and she got contact lenses that day. And as she came out of the doctor's office, Tamara went up to her and said, okay, what would you like to do for your glasses today? And the girl thought, oh, no, I don't need you selling me something I don't need. I've got contact lenses. I don't need glasses, okay? I've got glasses from like middle school or whatever. I can use them if I ever need them in an emergency, you know? And Tamara was like, well, I really think, you know, that you probably need to make sure that you have glasses that fit your prescription, that fit your face, so that if you do have a problem, like say you get an eye infection or something, you can have glasses as your backup because your eyes are really important part of you. They're an important organ in your body, right? You need to take care of your eyes. And this girl's like, no, I don't need that. You're trying to sell me on something here. I don't need that kind of thing. And so she left, and guess what happened the very next week? Tamara said she saw her in there, and the girl had an eye infection, okay? So I don't know. She needed glasses. She said she walked in with these little glasses that were like bowed out on the sides, and they were like pink, and they had, you know, tape on one side because it was broken. And she said they looked like Coke bottles. You know, they were terrible because they were from middle school or whatever. And this girl was like, yeah, I do need a pair of glasses, right? So Tamara's like, I told you. I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to help you out. See, this girl came back, though, and she realized that Tamara wasn't just trying to sell her on something to pad her pockets or to get commission or whatever. She really cared. She wanted to make sure that she had what she needed, and I think that's exactly what hospitality is like for us in the Christian life and in the church. You can be fake to people and act like you care, but man, that doesn't work. Like, that's not what's going to lead to multiplication. You actually have to care and not care about the multiplication as much, which, again, we'll talk about this next week, and we're going to parse out what that looks like in detail, but fake it till you make it just won't work in the church. That's not going to work for caring for people, right? People can smell insincerity a mile away. The problem is we're all prone to be like that, aren't we? Ooh, that's the problem. The problem is we all are prone to be fake at times. We don't like people sometimes. We don't care about people sometimes. We care about ourselves. We want to get something out of it, even if it's just enjoyment or a good feeling to be hospitable, right? Sometimes that's the case. And in our scripture for today, we're going to see a very similar situation. Jesus points this out to some religious leaders, some very highly religious people. And we're going to be in Luke chapter 14, verses 12 through 24. If you want to turn there, find it on your device. But we will also have it on the screens for you today if you need it. And this is Jesus at a dinner party, okay? So this is what's going on here. He's been invited into a very prominent religious leader's home. They're having a dinner party. He's been invited to the table. And I'm sure Jesus was a partier. You know, there was that one time he turned water into wine at that wedding feast or whatever it was. And people like being around him. Kids like being around him. I'm sure he's a very fun person, right? He liked to go to parties. But when he gets around people who are religious, especially religious hypocrites, Jesus isn't like the most fun person to be around, you know? Like if you read the Bible at all, you know that he's not real fun here. And we're going to see that play out in this very situation. These were supposed to be good people, the Jewish religious leaders. They were supposed to lead in doing good for people in following God. But instead, Jesus reveals that they have true motives that are just completely selfish. They're trying to use people. They're not trying to serve people. And so let's turn to the text here, and I'm going to drop us right in the middle of this party that's going on at this religious leader's house. And there's been a discussion already between Jesus and the guests. He's told all of the guests, hey, you should try to take the place of least importance when you sit at somebody's table in a feast like this. You need to pursue humility, okay? It's the whole, you know, those who humble themselves will be exalted, those who exalt themselves will be humbled kind of situation here. He's telling all the guests that. He's looked around and he said, when you do this, you need to humble yourselves, okay? Now, maybe it wasn't PC. Maybe it wasn't a high EQ, if you will, socially. But he went there. But then he ups the ante a little bit and he starts talking to the host of the party, the guy who's invited everybody, the high religious leader here. And this is what he says in verse 12 where we pick up. He said to the one who had invited him, when you give a lunch or a dinner, don't invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors, because they might invite you back and you would be repaid. On the contrary, when you host a banquet, invite those who are poor, maimed, lame, or blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Now, before we go any further here and read the rest of the story, which we'll get to, I want to talk about some things. Let's just go ahead and ask the question that I posed last week to us when we talked about, last time when we talked about hospitality over the summer. And this is our first point. If you're taking notes, you want to write it down. If your life were a dinner party, who would you invite to it? If your life were a dinner party, let's use it metaphorically, right? If your life were a dinner party, who would you invite to the party? Another way to ask this is, who's welcome at your table? Who are you inviting into your life? And why are you doing that? Basically, Jesus says to the host, you shouldn't have invited all these people that are here, okay? Not these people. You need to invite other people. Probably sucked the air out of the room, you know? It's kind of like awkward. It's one of those moments where it's just, okay, wow. I mean, geez, Louise. And Jesus had this way of telling people what they needed to hear in just the most awkward and direct way possible, right? That's how Jesus talked to these religious folks. And so it also made it radical because it was going against their cultural norms of the time as well. This was just socially acceptable for them to do. Like, this was a part of their hierarchy and aristocracy that they were in. And so not only was he being awkwardly direct, but he was going against the things in the culture, and it didn't make sense to them at some level. And just as an aside, before I go any further, I do just want to say, if you think this is how we should point out sin to one another in the church, then you might need to think again, because you're not Jesus, right? We talked about this last week about confronting sin. We need to be careful, because we all might think that we have legitimate reasons for being harsh to one another, but just remember, you're not Jesus, and Jesus was talking to hypocritical religious leaders here, not to the people that made up his church, and not to the apostles, right? So we just need to be careful there. We're not Jesus. Keep that in mind when you're confronting sin in each other's lives, which we need to do. I just thought I'd say that, though, and remind you. But see, he knew the Pharisees, and he knew the Sadducees here, and he knew that they were concerned with social status above anything else. They wanted to see what they could see from other people's perspective. They wanted the approval of everyone else, right? They were concerned with all of that, and their parties reflected it. And in general, when you threw a party, that's what it was about. It was about keeping that social order that had already been established in the culture. So you invited people who were like you, who had influence, so that you could be invited to their parties and you could also have influence. It was keeping that in-crowd tight, you know? And Jesus tells the host that he's thinking about this influence thing all wrong. Okay, this is the upside-down kingdom that we often talk about with Jesus. Like, this is the wrong thing. The culture does it like this, excluding people by nature, but the kingdom of God actually does it like this, where you don't exclude anybody. Everybody is welcome at the table here. If you really want to be godly, you need to put your money where your mouth is, he's saying. You need to make sure that you start serving people rather than seeing them as serving you. And he might point this out and talk about all of these things. And people are like, well, that's why Jesus is absurd. You need to invite the poor and the maimed and the blind and the lame. Is that really what he means here? We can't invite people that can like repay us or people that we love, like your brothers and sisters and family members and all of that. What's the deal with that? That's stupid. Like, why would Jesus ever say something ridiculous like that? We have to understand how to read the Bible, though, right? We have to understand Jesus and his teachings. This is hyperbole. Okay, this is how Jesus teaches a lot. He uses overstatements like this to make a point about something that's going on in our hearts. And he's doing that here for the religious leaders. He's basically saying, you got to put your money where your mouth is, okay? If you really want to be religious and holy and righteous before God, man, you can't just invite whoever is going to help your social status. You got to invite people that can't repay you. You got to be radical here and live your life for others. Otherwise, you're being just like anybody else in Roman society right now. Not a God follower. You look like anybody else in the Roman society. Completely selfish. So if you really want to be godly, serve others who can't serve you back. Serve others, not yourself. You can write it like this if you're taking notes. Use your influence to serve others rather than use others to serve your influence. You see that? That's the difference here. That's the upside down kingdom. So for us, we do have influence. We just do in life. We all have these spheres of influence. We talk about it like that, right? So for your job, for example, you have influence there. You should use your job to serve others rather than yourself. Are you thinking about your job primarily as a way to make money or to climb the corporate ladder or to live the American dream or to find purpose and fulfillment in life? Is that what you're using your job for? Or are you thinking of it as a way to serve others, including your coworkers or your bosses and managers or your customers that you're actually serving? Are you trying to gain influence or are you trying to serve? What's your motives there? Or we can do this with hobbies or extracurricular activities and sports and things like that, right? We can do that to serve others. When you go to the gym or you play gymnastics, you know, or you play volleyball, or you play soccer like our kids. We went swimming, you know, we did swimming for the summer, or whatever you do, if you build model trains, whatever it is, I don't know, whatever you do, you have influence in that in some way. Are you thinking about yourself in those, or are you using your influence for the good of others, thinking about them instead? Are you using those to serve yourself or to serve others? Maybe one more for us that is very relevant. Are you using social media and your social media influence to serve yourself or to serve others? You know, again, in America, I'll admit I'm probably the worst at this, I think, at times. Sometimes what we do is we tend to take these little things, like our time on social media or the internet, and say, well, you know, that's my way to unwind at the end of the day. Yeah. That's how I stay connected with other people, or that's how I'm entertained. And so we kind of segment off these little things that we call, we allow them as our selfish time. You know, you treat yourself time, okay? Like we treat ourselves, right? Like that's my time, okay? That's my time. But see, we should use whatever influence we have to serve others, right? So if you're on social media, how are you using that to serve others instead of yourself? Rosaria Butterfield, I thought was a really good example of this. She's an author. She's a leader in a church out of Durham, North Carolina. She wrote a book called Gospel Comes with a House Key. She's got a fantastic backstory. She was in the feminist movement. She was actually a practicing lesbian, LGBTQ, all of that kind of lifestyle. She ended up getting radically saved because of hospitality in her life. And so she's written a book because it's radically transformed how she views how to live her life. And she calls the kind of hospitality that we're called to as Christians radically ordinary hospitality. Just radically ordinary hospitality. It's just serving people where you are in your context. That's really all it is, looking for those. And she says she uses the internet for one thing. She's not much of an internet person. She's in her 60s now, so she's a little older. She doesn't like the internet, she said, except when it comes to the Nextdoor app. Now, if you're like my wife and you read the Nextdoor app around here in Roanoke, okay, there's not a whole lot of serving going on there, right? People use that a little bit more for something else, like complaining and critiquing and being as ugly as possible. But she said she uses the Nextdoor app to serve people because she said that when something comes up on there and people need to be served, they need somebody to go get groceries because they're a shut-in, or they need somebody to watch their kids or whatever it is, people will put that on there and she is the first to respond. She jumps on, she's got it on her phone so that it pops up and she can go and do it if she is able to. That's how she serves people in her neighborhood. It's one way. She does a bunch of other things, but I just thought that that was really interesting. She uses the internet to serve people, social media to serve others rather than herself. I wonder if we can ask that question too. How are we doing the same thing in our lives? But I also think it's more powerful, perhaps, if we ask the question this way. How are we prone to serve ourselves? What are some ways that we are prone to look inward and serve ourselves? Another way to ask it is, what are the barriers for us in showing true hospitality to others? Because you know we all do that, right? We all have barriers. We all have these things, these excuses that we use. It's the American way. I mean, we will use our jobs to get ahead. We will use our hobbies and sports to try to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. We will use social media to try to gain notoriety and do all of these selfish things with our lives. And while on the one hand, that could be shrewd, perhaps, on the other, it puts us in the place of the religious leaders here Jesus is talking about. We're using people rather than serving them. So, what are three big things? Well, let me lay these out for you. There's probably a bunch we could say, right? But three big things I think worth pointing out here that keep us from this hospitality that Jesus calls us to. The first one is risk. Risk. Think about the risk that it would have been for the Jewish leader here to bring people who were blind and poor and lame, maimed, all these different things, into his social status. It would have affected his social, it would have affected the way other people, they may have looked at him funny. There's a risk there, right? Socially for him. There's also a risk physically. Maybe the poor person could have stolen from him if he invited them in. I don't know. Yeah, but when we think about and talk about hospitality, we're literally talking about bringing the stranger in. The stranger. There's some natural risk that comes with that, right? We don't know people very well. We're going to bring them in. Usually the risk is more emotional or social than it is physical, but sometimes it can be. And listen, that doesn't mean we're not wise, right? I'm not saying just throw wisdom out the window here. Protecting ourselves is important. We teach our kids not to talk to strangers for a reason, okay? Like we want to have wisdom here. We are valuable, and we need to protect our value. But you have to make sure that you weigh the risks here, right? Like we might want to say that we call this the edgy side of wise at times, because you don't want to bring people in too soon, too deep, but you also don't want to use that as an excuse to never show hospitality to the stranger. See, God can transform people through our hospitality. I just think of Jean Valjean in Les Mis, right? Classic fictional example of this happening. Beautiful story of the bishop bringing in Jean Valjean after he's just come out of prison. Nobody wants to touch Jean Valjean with a 10-foot pole, right? But the bishop brings him in and gives him food and lets him stay for the night. And what's Jean do? Well, he steals and he leaves. And then he's brought back by the magistrates. And they say, did he steal all of your stuff? And the bishop says, no, I gave him that. And here, he forgot the candlesticks, right? His forgiveness, his hospitality is what transformed Jean Valjean to go on to be this incredible leader in the little community that he was in, right? And that's fiction. I thought of a real example. I was listening to a sermon on this week, and I heard the story from the Summit Church that might be a little bit more relevant. One of my friends at the Summit, Hank Murphy, put himself out there at the gym one day with a guy. He said he went to go work out, and he saw this guy that looked new. He'd never seen him before. And so he just went over to him and said, hey, man, you want to work out together here today? You're alone, I'm alone. That's a risk, right? It's a small risk, but it's a risk. The guy could have looked at him sideways and looked at him like he was an idiot or something like that and never wanted to talk to him again. Every time they saw each other in the gym, it would have been awkward, right? You know? But the guy said, no, yeah, I would love to work out. I'm new to the gym. This is my first day, and I'm new to the area. And so Hank, because he was willing to take the risk, that he struck up this relationship with this guy. And to make a long story short, eventually the guy came to the Summit. He heard the gospel. Hank was able to share the gospel with him, and he became a Christian because of it. All because Hank was willing to just take a step and say and take the risk and say, hey, why don't you work out with me today? Let's do that. So it's very interesting how risk can perpetuate the mission for us. Let's be wise, but let's make sure that we ride the edgy side of wise. Let's take risks for the kingdom. That's what God calls us to in hospitality. The second thing that we could talk about here is margin. Margin is also another thing that we might use as an excuse. Margin is both the time and the money it takes to pour ourselves out for others. Think about this party that Jesus is at, right? It's full of religious leaders who were busy. You know, some didn't even have time to care for their own parents, Jesus talks about, much less the poor or the lame or all these different people, people who usually need an extraordinary amount of time and money to be cared for in their circumstances. And these leaders, like so many, wanted to use their time and their money for personal gain, not to help others. So throwing a party and feeding people isn't cheap, right? You don't just invite anybody to that. You don't want to just invite somebody who can't repay you. You want to get a good ROI, return on investment, right? Invite the right people so they can invite you back and get something out of it. They'd rather have tithed their spices to look holy and prayed in public in front of other people and used their time that way than they would have serving those who are poor and couldn't repay them. Of course, we do this too, though, before we start looking down our nose at these guys, right? We busy up our schedule so much that we can work and do other things in our life and have fun, but we don't have time to help folks sometimes. You know, we can't slow down to engage with somebody, much less somebody who really needs it in our society, like the poor or the widow or the orphan. Man, we might slow down to help our family. We might even slow down to help one another in the church, but we certainly aren't going to slow down to help a stranger. And this is not the only reason why we would do this, but guys, this is definitely why we need Sabbath rest on a weekly basis. Because Sabbath makes us slow down, right? Sabbath shows us how to give margin in our lives. Sabbath teaches us that we have to slow down and worship God and have moments of being instead of doing so that we can bring people into that with us. So if you're jam-packing your weeks or days with so much stuff and not leaving room to help people or even have a five-minute conversation with them, much less serve them in some tangible way, which could take hours or days or even months or years, depending on their circumstances, man, then you're never going to be able to bring people into your life and show them that you care for them because you don't. Your lack of margin tells them that. And I think this is where I'm at sometimes in my life. I mean, in ministry, you guys know, I talk about it all the time. I can't even tell where I'm working and when I'm not working sometimes because my job is literally to be with you guys and to encourage and equip you guys, right? And so I try to make margin to rest with my kids, but we have three kids, and so that takes up a lot of time. I have other family that I want to spend time with. I want to spend time with you. Man, where do I find the margin? And I'm not serving right now anywhere in Roanoke, and I think that's kind of shame on me. I want to lead out of that, and I want to try to find someplace this year where I can serve my time and show hospitality, bring people into my life, because I think that that's the difference between fake and real hospitality. Do I say that I care, or do I really care? And I think that's important for all of us to ask that question about the margin in our lives. Last thing I want to point out before we move on to the rest of the text is misunderstanding about hospitality. It's easy for us to misunderstand the kind of hospitality God is actually calling us to show here. Because we often look at hospitality as something that's this big production, right? Like we have to prepare, we have to get ready for people, we have to make everything perfect, and we're entertaining people. I mean, we are in the South after all, even though the snow doesn't look like it. We are in the South, right? Southern hospitality is a real thing if you're not from the South. That is a real cultural expectation for people in the South, okay? But see, that's not the hospitality that Jesus is talking about here. Your house doesn't have to be in order. You don't have to have everything put together, because he's talking about being intentional to just bring people into your life. As a matter of fact, to practice true hospitality, you probably shouldn't have everything together, because that's not how your life looks at all, right? You need to bring people into the mess. So you can define hospitality this way. Hospitality is intentionally bringing people into our lives, whether you have it all together or not, you know? Which most of us, if we're being honest, probably don't. So we need to realize that that's what hospitality is, just bringing people in to the mess that we call life. Doesn't mean you literally have to invite them to your house for dinner, although it could be that, because your home is where you spend the majority of your life. So maybe, you know, letting people into your life will be bringing them into your home at some point. But man, it's really about authenticity here. It's about revealing to people who you are. You're bringing them in without putting up walls. You're not putting on a show here for people. You're showing them who you are, so that you can also get to know who they are. That's the point. That's biblical hospitality. That means this is a call for everybody who follows Jesus, not just for the mom at home who can, you know, bring people in and cook a good dinner, right? This is for everyone, not just people who own houses. It's for everyone. Jesus didn't own a home himself, right? He said he had no place to lay his head, and yet he was the master of showing people hospitality, bringing them in to his life. Listen, we need to learn hospitality, especially for those who need it most, those who are underserved, undervalued, marginalized. And Jesus says here, we'll be blessed if we do that. That's the language he used. Blessed basically means fulfilled, you know? We'll be fulfilled. We talked about this in the Sermon on the Mount series back in the fall. If you want to go back there and listen to that, blessing others is fulfilling. Giving without expecting anything in return, that's a blessing. It's fulfilling for our lives. So going back to the story here, Jesus calls the host out for being self-serving rather than selfless. He sees that the religious leader's all about getting that status boost. So it's awkward when Jesus does that. But he puts his finger right on this guy's idol in his life, doesn't he? Just like God's word tends to do for us. And if we go back to the party, verse 15, this is what it says. When one of those who reclined at the table with him heard these things, he said to him, "Well, blessed is the one who will eat bread in the kingdom of heaven." It's like this guy, to cut some tension here, he's a socially savvy guy. He's probably read How to Win Friends and Influence People, okay? He's trying to be very high EQ, and he recognizes this is getting awkward. All right, let me step in and say something here, you know? You know who's going to be blessed, right? The people who eat the food in heaven, you know? That's what's going to, we can all agree on that, right? It's going to be a blessing to be in heaven. It's like when somebody steps in and says, "So how about that weather, right? You know, how about them that sports team? Sports, right?" Somebody says sports, right? It's like you're trying to find common ground. You're just trying to cut the tension. And then Jesus, I think Jesus takes it as a challenge here, okay? It's almost like he rolls up his sleeves and is like, "You want to talk about the kingdom, all right? Okay, I got something I'll tell you about the kingdom here." It's like a hold my wine kind of moment, right? He's like, "Hey, you want to talk kingdom? All right, let's talk kingdom. Let's get into it. Watch this." And then verse 16, then he told him, "A man was giving a large banquet and invited many." So think a king's banquet. Think the most opulent banquet you can possibly think of. "And at the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who were invited, 'Come, because everything is ready now.' But without exception, they all began to make excuses. The first one said to him, 'I have bought a field and I must go to see it. I ask you to excuse me.' And another said, 'I've bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm going to try them out. I ask you to excuse me.' And another said, 'I just got married and therefore I'm unable to come.' So the servant came back," and he didn't even ask for an excuse there, right? It's like, you know. "So the servant came back and reported these things to his master. And then in anger, the master of the house told his servant, 'Go quickly into the streets and alleys of the city and bring in here the poor, the maimed, the blind, and the lame.'" Heard that language just a minute ago when Jesus was talking, didn't we? "Master," the servant said, "what you ordered has been done, and there's still room." Then the master told the servant, "Go out into the highways and hedges and make them come in, so that my house may be filled. For I tell you, not one of those people who were invited will enjoy my banquet." So we pivoted to an eternal conversation now, right? Like Jesus just ups the ante. He goes right to it. He's talking about eternity here. So he was teaching the host how to host, and now he's talking to everybody and saying, this is what's at stake here if you don't listen to me. Because this is a parable, like most parables are, about the kingdom of heaven, about eternity. You've got this man throwing the party, but then you've got these three guests who have these big excuses, right? So let's just see if we can break down these big excuses. It's very interesting how they go. They're kind of like a major category for life, every single one of these three. Because the first guy says he's got property that he has to go check out. He's very wealthy, you see. He's got property that he has to go check out. Sounds like he accepted the invitation to begin with, because in these days, the parties kind of had different waves, and the host would have gone out and said, hey, we're throwing this banquet, save the date. It's kind of like what we do with weddings, right? And then instead of accepting the invitation when it was time for the party, the guy was like, no, take that back, JK, right? I don't need to come. I need to look at my property. And if this guy had been so wealthy that he had this kind of property, he would have had other people to check on it for him anyway, so why in the world was this an excuse? It was just that. It was an excuse not to come for some reason. Doesn't make sense. Second guy had a job to think about, right? He had these five yoke of oxen that he had to go and see. And he was also probably wealthy as well, a business owner perhaps. He had five. That's a big deal back in that time. So he would have had people to do that sort of thing for him as well. It was just an excuse not to come to this thing. They were really snubbing the host of this banquet. And the third guy, he has a relationship to think about, right? He's just been married. So maybe he has a legitimate excuse. I don't know if that's what Jesus is saying here or not. Probably not, though, because what bride doesn't want to get dressed up and go to this opulent banquet, right? What new bride wouldn't want to do that and go to this incredible party fit for a king? So in each of these categories, there's an excuse being made, and it's property, career, relationship, wealth, career, relationship, we could say it that way. Three major excuses for why we might not follow Jesus with our whole lives and our whole heart, you see? Because we're so consumed with gaining wealth and property and enjoying things in this American life, this American dream, or we're so consumed with our career and making sure we can climb that ladder and find fulfillment and purpose in what we're doing, or we're so consumed with the relationships that we have and we're so filled with anxiety about making sure that we have the approval of others, we idolize our kids or our spouse or our friendships, or maybe we idolize the idea of having kids or spouse or certain friends, that we can't give ourselves fully to God for all of these different reasons, right? And Jesus' point that is, it's that anybody who's invited into God's kingdom and refuses to enter, man, it's not going to be good for them because they're not going to get to enjoy the feast in eternity. That's his point. So I want to give you the second big point for today that we're going to also ask as a question. The first was, if your life were a party, who would you invite into that? And the second is this. Have you accepted Jesus' invitation to come to his party or to come to his table? We could put it that way. Have you accepted his invitation to come to his table? For those of you who do follow Jesus, man, you know the answer is a resounding yes, right? Like you're ready to go. You realize what he's done for you and you have humbled yourself and you have given him everything. You've left everything to get to his party, right? You've given it all up so that you could go to the party that he's throwing for you in eternity, because that means you give up whatever it is that holds you back. You've given up all of the excuses. There's no excuses for you. You want to be there. But for the others of you here today who are listening here in person or maybe online, maybe you don't know whether you've actually given it up or not. Let me help you understand the parable even further here. Let's dig in just a little bit before we close out our time. We use the language of a mountain here a lot for knowing God and being known by him. We don't get that from anywhere. We get that from Isaiah. And so Isaiah, the prophet, uses the language of mountain for knowing and being known by God. That is the pinnacle of human creation. That's where we all want to be, on the mountaintop, right? But then Isaiah does something really cool because he meshes what Jesus is saying about the party with the mountaintop. Jesus gets his language about the banquet from this passage in Isaiah chapter 25. The prophet wrote, and I'm going to quote this at length, "On this mountain," talking about the mountain of the Lord, the knowing God for eternity, "on this mountain, the Lord of armies will prepare for all the peoples a feast of choice meat, a feast with aged wine, prime cuts of choice meat, fine vintage wine. On this mountain, he will swallow up the burial shroud, the shroud over all the peoples, the sheet covering all the nations," which is what? It's death, right? He's going to swallow up death. "And when he swallowed up death once and for all, the Lord God will wipe away the tears from every face and remove his people's disgrace from the whole earth. For the Lord has spoken. On that day, it will be said, 'Look, this is our God. We have waited for him and he saved us. This is the Lord. We have waited for him. Let's rejoice and be glad in his salvation.'" And see, when we make excuses for not giving Jesus everything in our heart and our life and our mind, that will not be us. We will not get to sit at the table. So let me just ask, are you making excuses right now in your life for not following him? Are there some of these excuses? You trying to gain property, wealth? Are you trying to use a career? Are you trying to use sports? Are you trying to use something else in your life to gain purpose and meaning? Are you trying to use a relationship and using that as an excuse? Jesus says those who are poor and maimed and blind and lame, it's that exact language he used when he's talking to the host, right? Those are the ones who get to enjoy eternity with God forever. Does that mean literal poor and blind and lame and maimed and all of that? Maybe. I don't think so, though, right? It's very reminiscent of what from the Sermon on the Mount? The Beatitudes, right? You remember that in the Sermon on the Mount? Who are the ones that get to inherit the kingdom of heaven? Poor in spirit, right? That's what he's talking about here. Those who recognize they have a debt that they cannot pay. They're poor. They can't get to eternity. They can never give enough to get to eternity. Those are the ones who accept the invitation into the party. The ones who recognize that they need this invitation if they're ever going to get in. They realize they'd never be able to come to the table otherwise. See, this would have gone against every social construct in Jesus' day to have done this. For some wealthy guy like a king to invite all these people from the alleyways and the ditches and the hedges and the highways, all these strangers and poor people and maimed and lame and all of that. Yet this is what God has done for you and me if we realize that we're poor in spirit, right? Jesus' point is that those who don't want to come to the feast, they won't because they're too busy. They've got excuses. And those who see the absolute honor and blessing that it is to feast with the God of creation, they will get to because they realize that they have a need that he has met for them. They weren't expecting it, and yet God has offered it to them anyway. In another sermon I listened to on this passage, a pastor was talking about this, and he told a story of his friend who was a missionary. And this missionary went over to a Middle Eastern country, and he was sharing the gospel with some Muslim friends, and he used this parable out of Luke chapter 14 to do that. And he was walking them through it, and he asked them, hey, if there was ever a possibility that they might be invited to the party that their king of their country, their Muslim country, would host, would they go if they were invited? And they were like, no, that's not possible. You don't understand. We would never be invited to that party because our king is so far above us in social status and all of that. He's close to God, right? Like, that's the whole deal there. He's like, okay, but just imagine in some kind of scenario that you would be invited to this king's party. Would you go? And they're like, bro, you don't understand. We can never go to a party like that. Right? Like, they're understanding their place, and they realize they could never go and be invited to a party like this. And the guy's like, listen, guys, you're not helping me out here. Just imagine, just use your imagination, and in some reality, in some way, just imagine that the king comes out of his palace, and he walks down the street while you're doing your everyday job, and he takes you by the hand, and he says, hey, friend, come and go to the party with me. If there was ever a reality where that could possibly happen, just go with me on it, would you say yes to the party? Their response is yes. It would be the greatest honor. It would be the greatest honor of our lives to step into that with our king, to have him personally invite us in to his life. That's what God has done for us. Do we understand the depth of our need, and do we understand how great his grace is for us? That he would step into reality as a baby and grow up and redeem us so that we could have a seat at the table, the place of highest honor, greatest fulfillment and purpose and meaning for us. That's what God has done for us. You can write it this way. Jesus has made it possible for us to come to his table. He's made it possible. That's what the gospel is for us. The gospel brings us close to God. Even when we don't deserve it, we recognize we don't deserve it, right? But it's everything that we're longing for, maybe even if we don't realize it. And so Jesus was made poor for us, right? He was maimed for us. He was made lame on our behalf, and he went down into the blindness of death for 3 days so that you and I could be brought into his kingdom. Feast with God forever. Man, we've been shown the greatest hospitality by God. Jesus brought us in, the undesirables. He brought us into his party, even though we've rebelled against him time and time again, and he was cursed so that we could be blessed, you see. Showing hospitality is a blessing, but he was cursed on our behalf so that we could get the blessing that we didn't deserve. But if we make excuses and we find ways to avoid being brought in, I mean, we're not going to be able to enter his presence at all, and it's going to be a tragedy because nobody should miss this party. Nobody. It also means there's a lot at stake for us here as well, right? In showing hospitality to others ourselves because we are ambassadors to God. Who do you think those messengers were that brought people into the party in this parable? Guys, that's us. That's where we should. He was telling those religious leaders, that's who you should be. And instead, they were using people and excluding people from the party, right? This is us. We're the messengers. We go out and gather people in the highways and the hedges and the alleyways and the ditches. We're the ones that get the great honor of filling his house here on earth. And so before we end here in just a minute, let me cast a visionary goal for you, like I said I would do at the beginning. I know I didn't do it last week with the authentic community, but actually, it wasn't planned either. I just forgot. Okay, so I'm just being real. But this week actually does both authentic community and hospitality. Because really, when we look at hospitality, like I said at the beginning, it's just bringing people into the authentic community we should be building here. It's bringing people in, not just to our individual lives, but to our collective lives. As we do life together and as we have community with one another, there's no outsider here at Redemption Church, or at least there shouldn't be. We learn to bring people in. That's called hospitality. And so the goal that I want you guys to consider and commit to for these two core values, building authentic community and hospitality, is I want you to set aside one night a week to bring people in that you don't know into your life. Set aside one day, one night a week, just a few hours a week here we're talking about, to bring people in that you don't know so that they can be somebody that you know and that they can know you. So we talk about hospitality here to use us, to describe us bringing the stranger in. But in the Bible, really, hospitality is used both ways. It's used for the stranger and bringing them in, but it's also used for bringing our brothers and sisters in Christ in, getting to know them more and more. So make sure you sit down and carve out time. Maybe do that today while you're eating lunch or whatever. Make that margin, right? To invite people into your life at least once a week so that they can know you and you can know them. And man, you can start with the people in our church. Maybe that's an easy thing to do. People that you've seen but you don't know. I mean, we're a new church. I see a lot of faces around that I've not seen before. You know, we could be strangers to one another. And so let's overcome that barrier, but then let's let that boost us to then bring strangers into our lives as well. People who are lost, people who don't know Jesus, right? That's what that means for us here. So let's make sure that we do that in our lives and be intentional to do that. Even outside of community group, you know, we use community group, DNA groups as a structured way to lead to organic relationships. So let's make sure that we're not like, you know, making sure that community group and DNA group is the thing that we focus on. No, it needs to be the people in those things. That's why we do them, right? It's not about the program. It's about the people. So let's use those things to lead us into these authentic relationships and make this a normal rhythm in your life. Much like reading the Bible through the year should be a normal rhythm for you, right? Let's hope everybody has done that. If you remember that from the first sermon in this series, I hope you're pursuing that. But let's make hospitality a normal rhythm as well. So we begin to invite other people in. We need to ask ourselves, are we doing this to grow our church numerically, or are we doing it to actually love people? I'm not saying we don't want to grow, right? I want us to grow. I mean, we talked about that. We're going to set goals for growth. Multiplication is about growth, yes. But is it fake or is it real? Because see, the fake will not lead to growth. I don't want to grow if it's going to be fake anyway, right? I want us to show true hospitality. And it will lead to growth eventually. I mean, are we salesmen trying to sell something to people they don't need? Are we salesmen trying to, you know, gain something from selling the gospel to people to meet an end that we want to achieve? Are we doing it because we really care about people? We've been shown great rest, great redemption. We've been brought to the table, and we want other people to come to the table with us. If you struggle with actually caring about people, which I've told you I do at times, right? Then the response is to meditate on the gospel. Recognize that you have been brought to the table when you don't deserve it, right? Remember that God has brought you to his table, and that's going to compel you to invite others in. He's going to throw a party that nobody should miss. And I thought about this week, and I'll end with this. I thought it was so relevant, actually. My kids have a book by Dr. Seuss called Hooper Humperdinck, Not Him. Any parents out there read this book before? Any parents? Anybody? Oh, come on, man, you're missing out. It's one of the classics, okay? It's a book that I thought was so relevant. There's this kid throwing a birthday party, and for some reason, he doesn't like Hooper Humperdinck, okay? Not him. I'm going to invite everybody to the party except for Hooper Humperdinck. And so all throughout the book, the party gets bigger and bigger, and he describes more and more of who he's going to invite to the party and how many kids are coming and all this ice cream and circus and animals and all this stuff. And all the while, in every little page, Hooper Humperdinck's over there on the side just looking in with his little doggy. You know, he's like not invited to this thing. And this kid keeps talking about how he's going to have a grand party, the biggest you've ever seen, but Hooper Humperdinck can't come. And then it finally gets to the last page. And on the last page, it says, man, a party big and good as this is too good for anyone to miss. And so, you know, I sort of think I will ask Hooper Humperdinck, you know? And I can't help but think that that's like us. Because God has no reason to invite us to his party. We are undesirable to him. We have rebelled. We make bad choices every day. And yet the grace is that he's going to invite us in anyway. He loves us. This is a party that he doesn't want anybody to miss. It's for everyone. And yet he was never on the fence about it like the kid was in the book, right? His plan was from the very beginning of time to bring us in and bring us to the table, give us a seat at the table with him. And that hospitality is almost unfathomable, but that hospitality that we've been shown is what leads us to show hospitality to others and invite them into the table with us. So I hope that that will be our church. We build authentic community, but we show true hospitality to the culture. Let's pray. God, I just pray for our church. We need you in this, God. We are so selfish and self-absorbed at times. And God, it's easy for us to show fake hospitality and try to fake it till you make it because we know we should, and Southern hospitality and all of that kind of stuff. But God, I just pray that you'll break all of those things down in our heart today. God, help us in this not to be fake. God, help us to really worship you with our whole life, to give everything to you, to not to make any excuse to come to your table and to recognize the great joy and fulfillment and blessing that it will bring to us. It's what we've always been longing for, because I know that when we believe that, we will want to bring others in. We will want to show them hospitality, the same hospitality that you've shown us. And so God, I pray that over our church today. Help us, God. Help us not to be fake. Help us to be real in this, and help us to love people because you've loved us. And I pray for those people here who don't know you, who've never come to your table. They don't recognize yet. God, bring them to that place where they recognize their great need, that they are the poor and the blind and the maimed and the lame. They are poor in spirit. And God, you have given them everything necessary. You have made a way for them to come to the table. God, help them believe that today. Just pray all this in Jesus' name, who makes it possible for us to pray to you. Amen. Thanks so much for listening with us today. We hope that it was an encouragement to you. But you know, we don't see this as a replacement for gathering with other believers in a local church context. So if you don't have a local church, we would encourage you to plug in with one wherever you are. And if you're in Roanoke, Virginia, we'd love to invite you to plug in with us here at Redemption Church. And you're welcome anytime to gather with us. But you can check us out online at our website, redemptionroanoke.com. You can look for other content or resources there. But thanks again for listening.